Greetings and welcome to another Fanhouse MMA podcast. This is Michael David Smith, joined as always by Ariel Helwani. Ariel, how are you doing today?
Doing great, MDS. How are you?
I am doing just fine. You know, I think we're going to spend the bulk of our time today talking about UFC 98, a very big show coming up Saturday night. But this past Friday was about as busy a Friday night in the MMA world as I can remember. Usually the big shows are Saturday night. We actually had three shows on Friday night that I think we should talk about. I was at the Bellator show in Chicago. You were covering the Bobby Lashley fight. And then once I caught up on my DVR Saturday morning, I wrote something about the Strikeforce show Friday night. So let's start with that. Ariel, what were your thoughts on Bobby Lashley's big win?
Oh, I thought it was unbelievable. I'm obviously a big Bobby Lashley fan. Obviously, I have a soft spot for the pro wrestlers, and I thought that people were unfairly criticizing him after his last fight, his last performance against Jason Guida. A lot of people said that he looked lackluster and all this stuff. I was actually really impressed with that performance too, just because the new opponent came on short notice. It was supposed to be Kent Shamrock. Guida's a different fighter, and more importantly, Lashley was very close to getting submitted in that fight. Guida had him caught in a guillotine choke that was really, really tight, and he showed a lot of poise to get out of it. So I was really excited to see him fight a guy like Mike Cook. I've actually interviewed Cook, and I saw him train at the Frank Shamrock gym in San Jose last year after the Iron Ring show on BET. He was one of the quote-unquote stars of that show. And I thought that Cook, just because you know, there wasn't a lot known about him, not a lot of footage on him, that he could, you know, give Lashley some problems. He's also a smaller heavyweight. But, I mean, he came out, Lashley, threw one punch, then caught him in the guillotine, down to the ground, and just choked him out. Cook couldn't even tap out. It was an amazing sight to see. 24 seconds, and I think it's time that people finally give Bobby Lashley his due. The guy is for real. I'm not saying that he's the next Brock Lesnar just yet, but he's certainly someone to keep your eye on, and I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the heavyweight division.
Well, I disagree with you to an extent, that because I don't think the criticism that Lashley faced after the Guida fight was unfair. I think it was fair. I didn't think he looked all that good in that fight. He did look good on Friday night, obviously. He dominated, and it only took him 24 seconds to win the fight. I still have my questions about him, and I want to see what he does against a guy who's just nowhere near, who's not going to be overpowered. That's what's interesting to me. So far, Bobby Lashley has taken on opponents that he could just overpower with strength and size. Assuming all goes as planned, his next fight is with Bob Sapp, and all of a sudden now he's taking on someone he can't just overpower with strength and size. So I'll be very curious to see him there. I'm looking forward to seeing him there. I was impressed with this most recent fight on Friday night. Maybe not quite as impressed with him overall as you are. I think the other thing is there's this easy comparison to make between Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley, and I do hope everyone understands that Brock Lesnar is younger than Bobby Lashley, he's been training in MMA longer than Bobby Lashley, he's bigger than Bobby Lashley, and he was a better college wrestler than Bobby Lashley. So, you know, it's really not a fair comparison at all between Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar. Now, you know, you can be a good fighter and not be Brock Lesnar, and maybe Bobby Lashley will be, but I do hope no one is going to try to tag that comparison on him, because that just isn't a comparison that works very well.
Yeah, and I think that people who follow the sport are quick to not make that comparison. We all know that, you know, while they both come from WWE, and like you said, they have this amateur wrestling background, it's really apples and oranges at this point. But I have to commend Bobby Lashley, because nowadays we see so many fighters talk about how they want to make it to the UFC and that's the end goal and all that stuff. But this guy has really said, you know, from the get-go that he's not interested in making it to the UFC right away. He wants to get, you know, five or six or seven fights under his belt, he wants to perhaps even go via the Ultimate Fighter. He said that he wants to fight on smaller shows like MFC and XFC, and that's really refreshing to hear that a guy who's had so much success in his wrestling career, he's made a lot of money thus far, is really saying, you know what, I'm going to take my time here and I'm going to work my way up the ladder.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I do like Bobby Lashley's approach. I think Bobby Lashley is taking the right approach to his MMA career. He's training at American Top Team, so it's not like he thinks he can just waltz into the cage and beat legitimately good opponents. He knows that he has to work hard. He has to train hard to get himself to the place where he can beat some of the top heavyweights, which I think is his ultimate goal. But he realizes that's going to take some time. And it's going to take quite a bit of hard work. Overall, I thought it was kind of a good thing for the sport that Bobby Lashley, a well-known guy, is getting into it. And I think it's a good thing for HDNet. What did you think of the HDNet show overall? And do you think that there's interest in some of these smaller organizations beyond just a Bobby Lashley?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you mention that because as of this morning, the Mike Cook versus Bobby Lashley video on YouTube has almost 2 million views, which is pretty incredible for a non-UFC fight. So clearly people are interested in Lashley. And, you see that HDNet Fights logo sitting on the bottom left corner of that video throughout the entire, 2 to 3 minute clip. So that's great exposure for HDNet. HDNet has to be really happy about that. Unfortunately, HDNet's going through some issues now where they might be taking off Time Warner, which would be a huge blow to MMA fans on the East Coast, including myself, now that we won't be able to see these fights like Bobby Lashley on MFC, Dream, Sengoku, etc. As for the telecast, I often find that the HDNet telecast, for whatever reason, drag. I think it's because there's several reasons why. I think I like how Showtime, when they have their fights, they put the card at the beginning of the fight for you to see. And you know, okay, I'm getting 5 fights, I'm getting 4 fights, 6 fights, whatever. HDNet doesn't do that. So you never really know, obviously you see it on your television, this telecast is from 10 to 1 or whatever, but you never know how many fights you're getting. And it often feels like it drags on and on and on. I mean, I'm not even talking about the Japanese cards, which go on for like more than 5 hours, just these, local North American cards. And I find that their graphics are very outdated, their pre-fight packages, very outdated. I'd like to see them change it up. They've been doing this now for 2 years, telecasting MMA, almost 2 years. And I'd just like to see them, revamp a little bit. I don't have a huge problem. I actually like Ron Kruk as the play-by-play man more so than Kenny Rice, so I was okay with him on the call, as well as Bas Rutten. But I just feel like there's something missing. I mean, the action is usually, it's okay. It's always, lesser known talent. So we're not talking about, the big name guys like in the UFC or WEC or Strikeforce. But it just seems to drag. And it was interesting because I was watching, the first hour, 10 to 11, was the HDNet telecast. And then once I switched over at 11 o'clock to Showtime, and then I was going back and forth, it just felt like, and I know a lot of people are against him, but with Mauro Ranallo on the call and Pat Miletich and the graphics and the Showtime atmosphere, it just felt like the Strikeforce event had a big-time feel to it, and HDNet was lacking that. So, they've got a long ways to go, but, they continue to improve, and they're putting out great fights like getting Lashley on this MFC card. I don't think Lashley would have made it on the MFC card if HDNet wasn't involved, so that's obviously a huge plus.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you about HDNet. I feel like, if you're an MMA fan, HDNet is great. Obviously, it's certainly not a complaint about having HDNet, but it's a matter of, I think HDNet could still stand to improve the way they present their live shows. It's great that they do it at all, but I think they could get better about making it feel more exciting, feel like a bigger deal. So they do have a ways to go in that respect. I was at the Bellator show in Chicago, and I thought they did a good job. From the little I've seen of their broadcasts, I don't have ESPN Deportes on my cable system, but from the little I've seen about their broadcasts, it seems like they do a very professional job, like you'd think anything affiliated with ESPN does. And I felt like from being in the arena, it was an exciting atmosphere. It was an atmosphere where the fans were feeling like they were getting a good MMA show. Overall, I was very impressed with Bellator. And I think Bellator is going places. I think Bellator, I wrote on Saturday morning that after my experience of being there, I think Bellator is on the right track. I think you think Bellator is on the right track as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious to get your take on Bjorn Rebney. You said you told me that you met the co-founder and CEO of the organization, and this is obviously a guy who has a extensive background in boxing. He was a part of promoting a lot of Sugar Ray Leonard fights, and even when Sugar Ray Leonard retired, and he started up his promotional company. So I'm always, you know, I'm a little cautious when I see these boxing guys go into MMA. But from talking to him on the phone, I got the sense that he's really passionate about this project and really knows his stuff. He was reeling off a lot of, you know, unknown talent, so to speak. But what was your take on him? You obviously got to talk to him in person.
Yeah, he and I sat down and talked for a while. We actually sat and watched one of the fights together. He came over and sat next to me for one of the fights, and we chatted during it, and we chatted between fights as well. I liked him. I think he knows the sport, and I think he knows how to run a promotion effectively. So I think he's going to do a good job, probably a better job than most of these other promoters who have come in. I think he understands that there's a right way to build and a wrong way to build, and he's not going to throw away a lot of money on, you know, signing one big name guy, but he is going to spend money on acquiring good talent, and he's going to stick with these tournament formats and convince some pretty good talent, I think, that if you win this tournament, you're going to be making a lot of money, because the winner of the tournament gets $100,000. Get to the finals, it's 50. Get to the semifinals, it's 25. So it's $175,000 in all if you win the tournament, which is a pretty competitive salary. It's, you know, it's, you're not going to attract Brock Lesnar away from the UFC for that kind of money, but you are going to attract some pretty good fighters who are willing to fight for that. I like their tournament format. I wouldn't necessarily urge another more established promotion to do it, but I think for a young promotion, a new promotion just starting out, I think the tournaments can work. Are you maybe not as sold on the tournament format?
Yeah, I don't like the tournament format at all, actually. I think the tournament format works for this inaugural season to try to establish new champions and whatnot, but afterwards, you know, obviously with a tournament, you can create new stars. You have situations like Toby Mata pulling off a crazy submission, all that stuff. But I like to see matchups, and I like to see some time put into those matchups to hype them, to build them up. And with this tournament format, and when we see, you know, guys come back to fight a month later, 3 weeks later, I just don't feel as though you get enough time to get emotionally invested in each of the fights. And it's just, they're just kind of being put out there for no reason. Like, you have this fight that you talked about, and a lot of people online wrote about, the Cary Vera against Leslie Smith fight on Friday night. That was not a part of a tournament, yet from everything I've heard, it was the best fight on the card. So I don't think that you need a tournament to get people into the fights or to have a reason to have a fight, obviously. And I think that with such a young organization, it would probably be in their best interest to just try to put on the best fights possible, as opposed to, you know, putting your two best welterweights in a tournament on opposite ends of a bracket and then having to wait, you know, a month or two to see if they can end up facing each other. You know what I mean? So, you know, Eddie Alvarez versus Jorge Masvidal would have been the best fight that they could possibly put on in terms of name value. And obviously they got a lot more mileage out of those guys by having them fight in a tournament. But now we're not going to see that fight. And while it's great that we have a nice story with Toby Mata, it doesn't always work out that way, especially when injuries come into play too. So I would like to see them stop it. I know it's not going to happen, so I don't really have much to argue about, but count me as one of the people that doesn't like the tournament.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how the tournament works in the second season. They'll have a champion in each weight class after these tournaments in the first season. I'm going to be curious to see what they do with those champions. It sounds like their idea is we're going to put these tournament winners in with the second season tournament winners, which that's the part that to me doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, if Eddie Alvarez wins the first season lightweight tournament, I don't necessarily think it makes much sense to say, now we're going to put him on ice for 6 months, wait until we get a second lightweight tournament done, have those winners fight each other. To me, if Eddie Alvarez wins this tournament and he's healthy at the start of their second season in September, I say you start the second season with a bang by getting Eddie Alvarez against a very good opponent, you know, maybe someone they could sign from Japan, which is something they've talked about. That, to me, would be the right approach. So I agree with you in that respect. But overall, I do like the potential that tournaments have for building excitement. The other show that I think we should talk about is just the Strikeforce show. It's kind of funny that Strikeforce is the biggest promotion of the three, but on this Friday night, I think it was the one that you and I paid the least attention to. But what did you think of the Strikeforce show?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I like the energy. I am a big fan of Ronaldo and Miletic on the mic, not so much of Steven Quadros. I never really got behind the whole Steven Quadros movement, even when he was a part of Pride. But, you know, other than that, I always think that Strikeforce, no matter what, we can complain about the matchmaking as of late and you know, some of their decisions in terms of who they put on the main card and undercard, but they always seem to put out fairly entertaining fights, and there were fairly entertaining fights on this card. I did think that it was weird that Fabricio Camoas, who was considered by many one of the you know, really underrated talents that a part of the Elite XC roster that Strikeforce purchased, the 42 fighter contracts, and he was put on the undercard. And I just don't think that Strikeforce is in the position to put up and coming talent like him on their non-televised portion of the card. But other than that, you know, having a guy like LeVar Johnson end the fight the way he did only helps his star continue to shine and all that good stuff. The female fight, Miesha Tate against Sarah Kaufman, was as exciting as expected. Obviously, Kaufman is on a whole other level than Tate, but still, the female fighters continue to produce and they continue to warrant their place on these major cards. And unfortunately, you know, the main event kind of went out the way it came in. There wasn't a lot of buzz surrounding this fight, and it kind of just, you know, another weird finish on Showtime. We've seen a lot of these weird finishes, and this one was certainly a very weird one. I want to bring up something that you mentioned in your, you know, in your post-fight report of the fight, saying that Herb Dean obviously blew that call. Ina did not get hit in the head. We can clearly see that from the photos. However, I do disagree with you when you say that we shouldn't try to have instant replay in MMA. I don't think that these situations happen enough where it would really slow down an event or a fight. And I think that it's a big deal for a guy to have the first loss on his record happen via a DQ, which really wasn't a DQ and shouldn't have been a DQ. So I don't think it would be such a bad idea for them to stop the action for a couple minutes, go to the monitor that is right next to the cage, check it out, and make the right call.
You know what my problem with it, Ariel? It's not that I think instant replay couldn't have been used effectively in that particular instance. It's that I'm just really worried that we're going to reach a point, if we allow instant replay in at all, and maybe this is a slippery slope argument, but I just feel like if we let instant replay into the sport, what's going to happen is people are going to start calling for it to be used more and more and more, and we're pretty soon going to reach the point where they're stopping fights right when the momentum is building and saying, well, hang on, I need to watch and see if this guy's knee was actually down when when his opponent's knee connected with his head. And I'm just really concerned that that's going to slow down the sport. And in my mind, MMA is the most exciting sport we have right now because of its fast pace. And I'm extremely worried that any incursion of instant replay is going to slow down that pace. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we could have a policy where the only time you allow instant replay is when it's over a stoppage of a fight. But even still, I'm just extremely concerned that instant replay would really drag down MMA. I don't like the way instant replay has been used in football, incidentally, and I know that puts me in the minority as well. I just don't like instant replay, and I hope it doesn't come into the sport, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does eventually.
It doesn't bother you that a guy, young up-and-coming fighter who, one of the main like talking points about him going into his fights is that he's undefeated and all this stuff, now has a loss on his record for a totally blown call. I mean, it was Herb Dean was way off, and Herb Dean, for people who don't know much about him, and I guess if you're listening to this, you probably do know a lot about him, but he is considered right now, 1A and 1B in terms of the top referees in MMA with Big John McCarthy, who's now starting to get back into the mix. So this doesn't happen to him often, and that's why I don't think it will happen in every event, every fight, et cetera, et cetera. I think it would only really be used, it's hard to say what happens on the smaller shows, but the ones that we get to see on television and all that, in maybe 5 to 6 fights a year. I mean, really, if you think about the last year or 2 years in MMA, how many real controversial endings have we seen where it wasn't clear cut and where the referee totally blew a call? I don't think you would see that many of them, and that's why I think it's important to have an MMA.
Yeah, I agree with you that there haven't been that many, but I think what we're going to start to see, if we have any instant replay at all, I think we will start to see things like a previous Herb Dean little mini controversy with the Brett Rogers hair-pulling foul against Ubongo Humphrey. I think we're headed down a path, if we allow any instant replay, in which we say, okay, you know what? We're going to have to go in and check to see if Brett Rogers really did pull Ubongo Humphrey's hair or if his gloves were just getting caught in Ubongo Humphrey's hair. And let's spend 5 minutes looking at the monitors trying to figure that out. Maybe I'm being a hysteric on this, and maybe it wouldn't be that big a deal, and maybe it wouldn't interrupt the fights the way I think it would. But I'm really worried. I feel like MMA, the reason the sport is growing is it's got this fast pace, this exciting atmosphere. And if you've been to a football game where there's a long replay delay, it just sucks out that atmosphere out of the stadium. And I don't want to see that happen in MMA.
It's a good point. It's definitely a valid argument that, we can see people start to want to nitpick certain calls and fights. So I definitely think that I don't think it's going to happen, first of all, because I don't think there's a big, movement to get MMA to get instant replay in MMA. But I do think it's a nice luxury to have for a situation like this. And it's unfortunate that a young fighter, had to lose his first fight in this fashion. Other than that, Strikeforce. This is the second show, the second major show by Strikeforce on Showtime. Obviously, they've had their own involvements with Showtime in the past when they had the deal with Elite XC due to the Frank Shamrock contract. But this was their second foray onto Showtime, and I really like the production. I love the fact that it's in HD. The Show XC events were not on HD, and I think Pat Miletich is doing a great job for a relative newbie in the world of television analysts. I think he's a pretty solid addition to the current crop of analysts we have in MMA. And now they're gearing up for a pretty big one. June 6th, they're venturing. They're venturing most east in their history. I definitely didn't say that correctly, but this is the first time that they're moving to like the Midwest area. Hopefully one day we'll see them on the East Coast, but this is big for them to go into a new market, have someone like Jake Shields main eventing against Robbie Lawler. Certainly, I know both of us have our issues with the card, and the fact that they haven't even announced what is going to be the fifth fight on that card. I don't know why they're pushing the Feijão Hammond fight off the undercard. It seems like a perfect fight to have as the opening fight. Feijão, who trains with Anderson Silva, up-and-coming star, just makes total sense. Why even, now less than 2 weeks away, why even try to like throw something in at the last minute? It makes no sense to me. But it's a big one for them, and hopefully they could pull off another good showing like they did on April 11th.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And the one other thing that every time we talk about Strikeforce until these issues are resolved, I think we have to bring up is, will they get Kimbo Slice? Will they get Gina Carano? Those are the two biggest names that they claimed they were going to have when they announced this Elite XC deal. They still don't have either one. What are your thoughts on the latest round of speculation?
Yeah, I think that Kimbo Slice is done with MMA. I don't think that we're going to see him fighting in North America perhaps ever. There may be a chance that we might see him sometime in the future fight in Japan, but I'm not holding my breath on that one. It seems to me that now that he's done contractually with Strikeforce, as Gary Shaw told me via email last week, that he's going to partner up with his old friends, Gary and Jared Shaw, and pursue a career in boxing. Might even be making his debut sometime later this summer, possibly in July. I mean, this is a really bad move by Kimbo Slice. Obviously, if he makes a lot of money, it's a great move, and really, it's all about the money. But I don't think that Kimbo Slice can hang with mid-level or low-level boxers. I thought his stand-up as an MMA fighter was very awkward, and I've asked some boxing journalists that I know to quickly critique Kimbo Slice's boxing skills from the limited footage that we have. And they all laugh when they watch it. I don't see how he thinks that he can hang for 12 rounds, 8 rounds, whatever, with top boxers. Obviously, he's not going to be fighting top boxers right away, but that has to be the end goal, unless he's just content on fighting on small cards for Gary Shaw promotions. So, again, I think that Kimbo Slice, if he wants to have a future in combat sports, it's not in MMA, it's not in boxing. It would have to be in K1, just because K1 fighters, their boxing skills aren't as good as normal boxers, and you don't have to worry about the ground game, so that's a huge plus for him. And that would seem to be the lesser of two evils here. He can just go over to Japan, make some money. They love guys with his look, and not have to worry about getting taken down, or have to worry about facing a guy with a deadly 1-2 punch. So I don't understand this. I mean, I do understand it, but I don't understand it, if you know what I mean. And I don't think he's going to have a very long career in boxing, probably just as long as the one we saw in MMA.
No, I don't think he'll have much of a career in any sport, just because I don't think he's an elite-level athlete. I do think that they could maybe follow kind of the Butterbean model. Eric Butterbean-esh did a lot of four-round fights, and usually against guys who maybe some of them looked tough but weren't legitimate fighters, and he'd go out there and knock them out quickly, or sometimes not so quickly, but at least win most of his fights. And then they brought in Butterbean to take on a very old Larry Holmes, and he actually went the distance with Larry Holmes before losing that fight. I think Butterbean is the model if they're looking to kind of base what they want to do with Kimbo on what has been done before. But certainly, Kimbo, he's not really going to be a big name for much longer. I think maybe Gary Shaw and Kimbo can work together, cash in on his name a little bit longer. And hey, more power to him. I don't begrudge Kimbo the opportunity to use his name to make some money. I just think that we all need to understand that he's not going to be a particularly good fighter either in boxing or in MMA. And I agree with you. I would like to see him give K1 a shot. I think it'd be great for K1, because I know K1 likes the idea of getting more exposure in the United States. I think it'd be great for them to have Kimbo do a K1 fight, carry it on HDNet. That could be intriguing as well. But it looks like boxing is next, and I don't think we're going to talk a whole lot about Kimbo, but he is a big enough name that he's at least worth mentioning. What I think we do want to talk a lot about, though, is UFC 98. It's a big main event. Rashad Evans and Lyoto Machida are both in my top 10 pound for pound. I'm not sure if they're in yours, Ariel, but how big a fight do you think this is when you've got the title fight in the marquee weight class in the UFC between two guys who I think at least are in the top 10 pound for pound fighters in the world?
I think it's a huge fight. It's interesting that you mentioned it's the title fight in the marquee division, yet I don't think if a lot of casual fans would get polled that they would mention Evans or Machida in terms of, you know, their top five favorite fighters. So it's interesting how that's worked out. But nevertheless, I think anyone who's a fan of UFC or MMA has to be very excited about this bout. The first time in UFC history that there's a title fight involving two undefeated fighters. Obviously, Rashad Evans has that one draw on his record, which I really consider a loss. You know, just forgetting about the actual, you know, semantics of calling it a draw and whatnot. Ortiz did deserve to win that fight, but, you know, obviously lost the point due to holding onto the cage. But nevertheless, Evans, in my opinion, the most improved fighter in MMA over the last year or two. When this guy was on The Ultimate Fighter the second season, just no one expected him to be the kind of superstar that he is now and continues to improve every single fight. I think that he has some of the best stand-up striking skills in MMA right now, and definitely in that light heavyweight division. I think that his movement and you know, his foot movement, his head movement, his hand speed, tremendous. We've seen him knock guys out with his hands and his legs now. I mean, this guy is a threat in all aspects of the game. And then also you have Lyoto Machida, who in my opinion is, you know, is creeping up into top five category in terms of pound for pound. His movement is tremendous. I mean, the guy never gets, you see him after a fight and there's never a bruise or a cut on his face. No one can touch him. And he's looked so impressive. And I highly disagree with anyone who says that he's boring. And at the end of the day, I think that Rashad Evans needs to try to take him down. It's obviously going to be harder to do than, you know, than for us to say. But Machida is just so good at his striking and so precise when it comes to his striking, and then so elusive when trying to avoid strikes, that at the end of the day, he'll win via decision.
Yeah, you know, you hit on all of the things that I wanted to say, but I think there are a couple we can go into some more depth on. First of all, the way Rashad Evans has improved as a fighter is just so impressive. And, you know, that's the really elite athletes in any sport, whether you're talking about Tiger Woods refining his swing, whether you're talking about when Michael Jordan came back from playing baseball and actually, you know, had a noticeably improved jump shot. You know, every elite athlete says, I'm not going to be satisfied with where I am now. I'm going to keep working at getting better. And I think that's the mindset Rashad Evans has had training with Greg Jackson. He said, you know, I'm not going to be satisfied just winning The Ultimate Fighter. I'm going to make myself into one of the great MMA fighters in the world. And I think that's what he's done. His stand-up, you mentioned his stand-up. This guy is a Big Ten wrestler. So, you know, he wrestled at Michigan State. We know he can wrestle. He can hold his own on the ground. His stand-up is outstanding, though. He really does have knockout power with both his hands and his feet. He's a real threat to anyone. But I don't know if there's ever been a fighter who would be harder to connect with if you've got knockout power in your hands and your feet than Lyoto Machida. I mean, he is so difficult to hit. He is so elusive. He has such great footwork. I posted a video over the weekend that showed Lyoto Machida's father talking about the way that the footwork is so important in the style of karate that he teaches. And that makes it a fascinating contrast. I totally agree with you that you know, people who think this is boring, it's like, you know, go play a video game. If you don't find this exciting, I don't think, you know, I just think that maybe MMA isn't the right sport for you. I find it fascinating to think, how will Rashad Evans and Lyoto Machida clash? Because they both have styles that, although they aren't the kind of traditional brawler, the styles are interesting. It's an interesting clash of styles. It'll be very interesting to see. I think you're right that Rashad Evans wants to take Lyoto Machida to the ground, but it's going to be interesting to see what can Rashad Evans do, because while he is a wrestler, a very good college wrestler, what we don't know yet is, does Rashad Evans have the kind of Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills? How well has he trained in that style of fighting, in that martial art, because we know he's got wrestling, we know he's got very improved stand-up. That's going to be interesting to see if Rashad Evans is able to take the fight to the ground. Is it possible, Ariel, that Rashad Evans could submit Lyoto Machida? Is it possible that Lyoto Machida could submit Rashad Evans? Do you think most of this fight will be on the ground or on the feet? What are your thoughts on just how this clash of styles will play out?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that is really the one aspect of Rashad Evans' game that we haven't really been able to see, his Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills. And, you know, for the most part, as of late, Machida hasn't really had a chance to show off his BJJ skills. I still think that Evans' best chance to win this fight would be to try to take him down and ground and pound him. I don't think that he'll be able to submit him. I do think that Machida can submit him, and obviously that is the one issue. If Evans tries to go to the ground, then he opens himself up to possibly getting submitted. So that's really, you know, that's why I find this fight to be so interesting, because, you know, Evans has this great wrestling background. So, you know, you think that maybe this is time for him to start showing that off again. But then we don't know about his BJJ skills. And then on the flip side, you know that Machida is a great Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter, even though we haven't seen it that often as of late. So there's all these, you know, they complement each other really well as far as two opponents go. So that's why I'm so interested to see this fight, and because I think that their stand-up skills are just so, it's just so much fun to watch these two guys strike. I don't think that Machida is a boring striker, and that's why I'm really excited to see who's going to push the pace. I think that Evans will try, and it probably isn't you know, the best idea, but I think that he will be the one pushing the pace. It would be interesting to see that if he sits back, whether or not Machida would try to push a little bit for the first time in the UFC. I don't think that's going to happen. That's why I think Evans eventually will start to get a little frustrated and try to push the pace. And there's one other interesting part about this fight that we haven't talked about, and it's, you know, obviously the title belt is on the line, but now it seems as though the next coaching spot for the next season of The Ultimate Fighter is also on the line, with Quinn Jackson heavily rumored to be one of the coaches, and the winner of Evans and Machida being the other coach, and then the two guys would face each other later this year. So there's a lot at stake in this fight, and on top of all that, one of these two guys is going to move up in terms of notoriety and exposure in the MMA world, and that's a big thing too.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I'll be very curious to see, assuming this does go forward with Rampage coaching against the winner of this, it'll be interesting to see what kind of coaches they are. Lyoto Machida, I just think if I were a young fighter, I would find it really cool to have the opportunity to get coached by Lyoto Machida, just because he has a style that is so different. Rashad Evans, obviously, it'd be great to get coached by him too if you're a young fighter. But Machida, just because I feel like almost every other Ultimate Fighter coach, they're teaching you things that you could learn from a lot of people. But if Machida really were to take the job of a coach seriously and really wanted to spend time working with young fighters, teaching them all that he knows, he could just be such a phenomenal coach. He could impart so much wisdom that you don't get everywhere else, because Machida's style is so unique. He has, you know, the martial art of karate, it had kind of become, in some MMA circles, almost like a joke. I mean, it had almost reached the point where a lot of people who were into MMA said, oh, if you take karate, you're not taking a real martial art. And Lyoto Machida has changed that, and he has shown that actually there is an effective way to have a base in karate and use that for a real fight, an MMA fight. And I think it's exciting to see that, and I think it would be fascinating to see. There are so many Americans whose first exposure to martial arts was taking karate lessons, and it would be so interesting to see what Lyoto Machida could do with an American fighter who had a background in karate and wanted to turn that into MMA. I think it'd be really exciting to see that, and definitely Ultimate Fighter, the next season, it should be interesting if it's Rampage against Rashad or Lyoto, and that'll be a great fight. It's a little bit unfortunate, though, that it's going to be so long until we see it. I guess that means It'll probably be about 7 months. Probably the Ultimate Fighter coaches will fight each other at the end of the year show in late December. So that's my only disappointment, is I was hoping we'd see Rampage get the winner of this a little bit sooner. But no question, light heavyweight division, there's so much talent in it that we're pretty much guaranteed of seeing good light heavyweight fights.
Yeah, and I also am a little disappointed. I don't really care to see Rampage on the Ultimate Fighter again. We just saw him last summer against Forrest Griffin, and I really think, and this is a whole other discussion for a whole other day, but I really think that the Ultimate Fighter format has grown incredibly stale. I mean, it's this, even this season. I mean, I am finding myself really bored this season, and I thought that the UK versus USA theme would get me a little more excited, just because, you know, it's a new little angle, a new little gimmick, but it's the same house, same jerseys, same venues, same format every single time, and now we're seeing, you know, the same coaches get recycled. So that's why I'm you know, the whole Ultimate Fighter discussion is one that I'm really passionate about, just given my, you know, my background in television, and I really think that it's time to revamp it. But when you talk about the Ultimate Fighter, two of the, you know, main characters to come out of that show that really had a strong rivalry, one that fans were dying to see, obviously Matt Hughes and Matt Serra were a part of it. They were supposed to fight December 2007. Serra gets injured a month before the fight, and now we have to wait almost 2 years later to finally see them back in action. And when you talk about, you know, the excitement around Machida and Evans, I am just as excited to see these two guys finally go at it. Just such great trash talking between the two of them. An amazing clash of personalities, different backgrounds, and ultimately I think Hughes is going to win quite convincingly, but I just can't wait to see the electricity in that arena, because everyone knows about the hatred between these two guys, and it's so great to finally see them back in action. I was worried that one of them is going to get injured or something, just because they're a little older and they've been injury prone as of late, but it seems as though we can finally rest easy, because Hughes and Serra are going to be competing in just 5 days now.
Yeah, it is such a great build-up for a fight. You know, I'm not big on this whole idea that you have to hype a fight. I mean, to me, it's more about the athletic competition than it is about the personalities. But I have to say, I'm excited about these two guys who just don't like each other finally stepping into the octagon together, settling it once and for all. They've been talking about each other for so long. They dislike each other so much. It's really funny. I think they both kind of just make you chuckle when they talk about each other. You can just hear the contempt in their voices, and they have very different voices. I mean, Matt Serra is the New Yorker, and Matt Hughes is the Midwesterner, and they're just so different that you can easily see why they dislike each other so much. It's going to be a lot of fun to finally get them. You know, there's also not a lot of question. I mean, you made the point. Hughes has certainly accomplished a lot more in the octagon than Serra has. And I think that, you know, if you look at what Matt Hughes does on his typical day versus what Matt Serra does on his typical day in the octagon, you'd have to say that Hughes comes into this the overwhelming favorite, and he does in Las Vegas. He's a pretty significant favorite. But I wouldn't totally rule out Serra pulling the upset. I mean, I certainly agree that Hughes is favored, but I could just see Serra. He does have a history of sometimes pulling out better performances than you expect of him. I think he'll be so motivated. He'll be so ready. Hughes is the favorite, but I think Serra at least has a shot, and I think it's just going to be a lot of fun to watch.
That's the main thing. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I just don't see... I view Hughes as a bigger welterweight, a guy who's going to be able to, you know, overpower Serra, stronger, better wrestler. And at the end of the day, I think he's a better striker as well. And I also think his jiu-jitsu skills, I think they're pretty comparable, both of them. But I just view Hughes on a whole other level as Matt Serra. And who knows? I mean, Matt Serra really, really hates this guy, and I get the feeling that Serra hates Hughes more than Hughes hates Serra. I think that Hughes views Serra as sort of beneath him and really not worthy of his time. And I think that Serra might be fighting with too much emotion, and he has this pent up aggression towards Matt Hughes. I mean, you even saw it when they first when they first ran into each other on The Ultimate Fighter on that fifth season, and you know, actually it was the sixth season when they were coaches, and Sarah just went up to him out of nowhere and is like, "I don't like you, you don't like me, let's cut the BS." And he was right. But Hughes was kind of looking at him as like, you know, this is the first day, just take it easy here. And I think that if you ask me, Sarah came out looking like the bigger heel on that show just because he's the one that always talks about his hatred. If you notice, Hughes doesn't talk about it as much. And I think that's really because Hughes obviously has a big ego and thinks that Sarah is kind of beneath him. And just look at their resumes, he has, you know, a pretty strong case. And at the end of the day, I don't think that Hughes is the type of guy that fights with his emotions like perhaps a Matt Serra, and that might be a big factor in this fight come Saturday night.
Ariel, who do you think is going to have the fans on his side on Saturday night in Las Vegas?
That's a really good question, and I think I'd have to go with Matt Serra because it seems as though Serra, a much more likable character, you can't deny that. But, you know, on the flip side, Sarah is the New Yorker, and a lot of people don't like New Yorkers. I know this very well. Hughes has a very loyal fan base, and I think we sometimes forget how loyal his fan base is. So this might be like a Nick Diaz, Frank Shamrock situation where, you know, the guy comes out, you hear a ton of boos, and the next guy comes out, and you hear a ton of boos also, but you also hear some cheers. At the end of the day, I'll go back on what I just said. I think it might be a 60-40 split in favor of Hughes just because he has been around a little longer and has done, you know, some more memorable things in Las Vegas, and he probably has a more loyal fan base there.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's going to be right around 50-50. But I think the most important thing is it's just going to be one of those fights where the crowd is really cheering whoever's active, and they just want to see a good old-fashioned brawl between these two guys. And I think these two guys are going to deliver. I think they're going to have a very good fight. I don't think this is going to be one of those fights where at the end of it you think, boy, that was, for all the buildup, that was disappointing. I think these guys are going to deliver. I think the crowd is going to be going wild. I think it's going to be a fairly divided crowd. And I just think it's a good thing for the sport. You know, one of the things that makes this sport different from team sports is you don't get sort of the passion of the fans. You know, you don't have the loyal Pittsburgh Steeler fan in the UFC. I mean, it doesn't work that way. You don't grow up cheering for a fighter for your entire life the way you do in team sports. But I do think these two guys in particular are going to have very vociferous fans on both sides of it. I think it's going to be a fun atmosphere. I think that's really going to get the crowd whipped up, and they're going to stay whipped up for the main event, which oddly enough, even though the main event is a better fight in terms of where these guys are in their MMA careers, I think the main event doesn't have as much heat around it, but the Hughes-Sarah fight really lends a lot of that heat to this show.
Absolutely, yeah. And it really, in my opinion, now with all these injuries that have happened, it really is, you know, a two and a half fight card. I mean, I give that half nod to Frankie Edgar, Sean Sherk. I think Sean Sherk has a lot to fight for at this point in his career. He's looking to get back in the title chase. And Edgar, you know, up and coming star, 9-1. This is a big fight for him. And I think that the UFC, I mean, they never would admit to this, but I think that the reason why they booked Sherk against Tyson Griffin was to try to help, you know, Griffin elevate himself to the next level. Obviously, that didn't happen, and now it's kind of the same situation here with Frankie Edgar. Edgar had a nice victory against Hermes Franca, you know, almost a year ago in July, and now he's finally back and healthy, and this could be a huge win for him. I still like Sean Sherk in that fight. I think that Sean Sherk looked very impressive against Tyson Griffin, and he's still a major player at 155 and probably doesn't get enough credit at 155 right now. I mean, he is right below Florian and Penn. I know the UFC probably doesn't want to book Penn versus Sherk too, so that's the little issue with that. But other than that, the fight just kind of, you know, it's not really as stacked as some of the other UFC fights that we've come to expect. And of course, it would have been a lot more interesting had guys like Josh Koscheck, Yushin Okami, you know, James Irvin been on the card as well.
Houston Alexander, another guy who's a fan favorite, very exciting fighter, also had to pull out. Yeah, this was kind of a star-crossed card. But I want to actually say I would put Sean Sherk, you said he's right below those top two, BJ Penn and Kenny Florian, who are fighting for the title in August. I would actually say right now, I still say Shirk is above Kenny Florian. And I think Shirk, if Kenny Florian were to beat BJ Penn, I think Sean Shirk could be close to title contention, where they might give him a shot at lightweight champion Kenny Florian, especially because, of course, Sean Shirk has already beaten Kenny Florian once before. So I think it's worth keeping an eye on Sean Shirk as a guy who could get a lightweight title shot fairly soon if BJ Penn loses the title. As long as BJ Penn keeps the title, though, you're correct. They're not going to do Penn Shirk 2, so that puts Shirk in kind of the gatekeeper role, where if you beat Sean Shirk, you've accomplished something big, but if Sean Shirk beats you, it's kind of like, well, that's what we thought was going to happen. Let's move on.
Yeah, and obviously, if Kenny Florian, I guess you could say, pulls off the upset in August, then Shirk, if Shirk wins on Saturday versus Florian 2, makes total sense, just because, as you mentioned, Shirk defeated him in a great fight, and that was a very different Kenny Florian, and I'm sure he'd love to avenge that loss at some point in his career. So that would make total sense. And so I guess you're right. You know, you sit back, you watch this fight, and then we'll see in August to see, what happens in Penn versus Florian, and then we can kind of decide who's the number one contender. And when you talk about Frankie Edgar, by the way, the East Coast scene here for MMA is growing. And another guy, I'm not trying to be too down on the card, but I am interested in seeing how Dan Miller does. Chael Sonnen, very accomplished veteran. Dan Miller, only one loss on his career and on his resume, and has looked very, very good in the UFC. I mean, great against Jake Roschel, great against Matt Horwich. I think that Dan Miller, obviously not there just yet in the middleweight division, but if he continues to pick off a couple of these veterans, he could be a player. Him and his brother obviously had a tough loss against Gray Maynard. I thought he had a bad game plan in that fight, but the Miller brothers, Dan and Jim, are doing some great things in the UFC, and it's nice to see the spirit of the IFL still live on, because obviously two of those guys did sort of make a name for themselves on a mainstream level in the IFL. So obviously, the New Jersey fighters with, Millers and Edgar, Philippe Nover, who fights in out of Brooklyn, also on this card. So as an East Coast MMA fan, it's nice to see some of these guys start to, work their way up the ladder as well.
Yeah, and I'm also interested in seeing how Dan Miller does. I'm impressed with Dan Miller as well. I think Chael Sonnen's going to be an interesting opponent for him. Maybe an opponent who tests him in some different ways than he's been tested so far in the UFC. So I'm going to be interested in seeing how that one plays out. Overall, top to bottom, it's an 11-fight card that you'll be seeing. I know you're going to be there in Las Vegas. And if you look at the full card, the full 11 fights, I think it has the potential to be 11 pretty good fights. I just think that it's, when you look at the really top fights, the ones that you're buying on the pay-per-view, the five fights that you're buying on the pay-per-view, I just think it is a little bit disappointing that when this card was announced several weeks ago, we thought we were going to be seeing Josh Koscheck, we thought we were going to be seeing Yushin Okami, we thought Houston Alexander, James Irvin, these guys who've had to pull out. It's a little bit disappointing that those top five pay-per-view fights maybe aren't going to be quite as good as we thought they were going to be. But overall, I think it's a pretty good 11-fight card. Definitely you're getting your money's worth if you're buying a ticket to be there in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question that this is not up there with, UFC 100 and in many ways, not as intriguing as UFC 97 in terms of how stacked the card is. But, the injuries are, especially lately, we're seeing so many injuries in MMA and in the UFC in particularly that, thankfully we haven't seen a lot of main event fighters get injured. But we're seeing, this card reminded me a lot of UFC 85 last year, the card in London, which just was decimated with injuries. That was originally, Liddell Hua. A lot of people forgot that they were supposed to actually fight then, and then Liddell Evans, and Liddell gets injured. Evans drops out. I mean, there were a lot of changes to that card, and eventually Matt Hughes fought Thiago Alves, and it's interesting now that, that was the last time we saw Matt Hughes fight. He obviously had some knee issues in that fight, and Alves, even though he came over 4 pounds over the weight limit, 174, looked very impressive and cemented his place as the number one contender after John Fitch in the UFC welterweight division. So it's going to happen with so many UFC cards, so many UFC fighters. But as you mentioned, I will be there in attendance, and I'm really excited. This is my first, as a side note, my first Las Vegas UFC event that I'm able to cover. And, you know, it's one thing to cover them in Montreal or any other city, but there just seems to be something a little more special about it covering in Vegas, so I can't wait.
Yeah, I have covered a UFC event at the MGM Grand before, and, you know, they're just such a great atmosphere. It's really going to be a phenomenal atmosphere. The top two fights are really, you know, it's as good as it gets for a main event and a co-main. It's just a little disappointed. It's disappointing to fans that, you know, maybe for some fans who planned their trips to Las Vegas at the time that they thought they were also going to see Koscheck, they were also going to see Okami, they were also going to see Houston Alexander. You know, that's a little disappointing. Of course, at the very start, when they first announced this, we thought it was going to be Brock Lesnar versus Frank Mir. And then there was a brief time when we thought it was going to be Rampage Jackson against Rashad Evans. So it has really changed quite a bit, this card, really. Hughes versus Sarah, ironically, the fight that keeps getting pushed back is the one fight that's kind of been the rock for this particular card. It's the one fight that hasn't been changed. But overall, I think it shows the strength of the UFC, what a strong position the UFC is in right now, that even when there are a lot of changes, a lot of fighters having to pull out for injury-related reasons, they just have so much talent on their roster right now that, once again, I think it's going to be a very good card on Saturday night.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Can't wait for it. And, you know, this is really beginning a stretch of awesome fights. I mean, just think of this. We've got UFC 98. Then 2 weeks later, we've got the Strikeforce show on Showtime, Lawler Shields. Then the next day, we've got Uriah Faber versus Mike Brown in a great card, top to bottom. The televised portion of that WEC card is tremendous. Then that next week, we've got UFC 99 in Germany. After that, we've got the tough finale on June 20th, not to mention a boxing fight, which I'm really excited for, David Haye against Vladimir Klitschko. And then a couple weeks later, UFC 100. So this stretch now, starting with UFC 98, is an awesome time for MMA fans. And on top of that, you've got Dream, you got the Super Hulk tournament coming up, which we are all very excited about. So we've had a little lull here, even though we had those three big fights on this past Friday. But now we've got some really big shows coming up, and I think it's going to be an awesome way to kick off the summer. This is, in my opinion, one of the most exciting summers in MMA history, with, you know, some of the big fights like, you know, Penn Florian, Anderson Silva, Forrest Griffin, all the cards on UFC 100, all the fights on UFC 100 with Lesnar and Mir and GSP and Alves, Bisping, Henderson. I mean, it's really a great, great summer that we have ahead of us. And then obviously Couture, Nogueira, and who knows, perhaps even Gina against Cyborg. So this is the official beginning of the summer for MMA fans, and it's an awesome way to start.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. I actually think definitely the best summer, in my opinion, for MMA. I mean, it's just when you look at the quality of the fights that we're going to see this summer. You know, I'm even still holding out hope we might see Fedor Emelianenko this summer. Call me crazy. You know, at this point, you can't ever bank on seeing Fedor, but I think there's a decent chance we'll see Fedor fight this summer as well. So just so much. The UFC will dominate it. I mean, from UFC 98 this weekend through UFC 102 at the end of August, they've got some really good shows. It's really a testament to how many good fighters the UFC has under contract right now and how good the UFC's matchmaking is right now, that they're just going to have so many good shows from May through August. But it's not just the UFC, it's also the WEC, it's also Strikeforce, it's also Dream. It's a great time to be an MMA fan. I don't think there's any question about that. And Ariel, it has been great talking about MMA with you over the last hour. Thanks for joining me, and I'm looking forward to talking to you next week when we discuss all the excitement that was at UFC 98.
Absolutely. Same here, MDS.
Okay, with that, we are done. And join us again next week when we'll have a complete wrap-up of UFC 98 and much more. Thanks for joining us on the Fanhouse MMA podcast.